Hello, everyone. Happy, happy Wednesday. Let's see. I'm looking to see if Gina is still here. It looks like I may have missed her. All I wanted to say was that, her teaching is really full of sweet reminders. I think listening to that teaching once a week can help keep us out of forgetfulness. It's my humble opinion anyway. I'm really glad that she's decided to join us. As Ken said, we are here now for the guiding light. And last week we were looking at the book of John, chapter 20, verses 19 to 23, which is Jesus appears to his disciples. That's the way it's titled in my Bible. And you might remember that John Mark Stroud was here with me last week, and he also shared after I shared, so that was kind of fun. I always think having two voices is fun. One thing that I really remember focusing on last week was verse 23. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. So again, since I kind of tripped over that one. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. And we talked about the misperception that's in the mind that if someone else sees me as guilty, that means that I am guilty. That's just not true. It's funny because it's a challenging lesson to learn. It's a challenging lesson to learn that someone else's judgment of me is not true. I think I mentioned last week that often when I'm teaching people how to let go of the I am bad thought, there's a couple of buts. Ways they attempt to cling to their guilt, even as I'm teaching them that they're innocent. And one way, of course, that they attempt to cling to their guilt is with their list of sins. You know, everybody has a list of sins, and they cling to those list of sins as proof of their guilt. But the other is someone else's judgment of them. And it maybe isn't just guilt, but also unworthiness or shame. So, for example, but my husband says I'm stupid, or my mother says I'm lazy, or my boss says I never do anything right. You know, this outside judgment of me is proof that I am guilty, unworthy, or shameful. I have a little friend here that's visiting with me, sitting on my shoulder right now, and he's so cute, or she, I don't know which it is. I know not everybody is attracted to flies, but I have been for some years now. I don't know how many years, about the length of time that I've lived in Pueblo. And flies, I don't know, it's almost like they are also attracted to me because they will seem to play with me. Like this one, just the way he's sitting on my shoulder or sitting on my arm. And sometimes when I hike, some of you may have seen pictures of this on my Facebook page, they'll land on me and they'll stay there for a long, long time. They'll hike with me. So I have one right here now that's just kind of buzzing around and playing with me a little bit. He's kind of cute. So I'm a little distracted by the cuteness of the fly now on my upper arm. But as I was saying, okay, I got to quit looking at you because you are definitely distracting me. You're so adorable. You know, he's wiping his hands like flies do and, kind of, I don't know if they have little tongues, but you know how they like lick their hands and they wipe their hands. And, they're really quite adorable. And this one is just as cute as any of them. But anyway, so talk about wouldn't hurt a fly. I mean, that's me. So as I was saying, I'll quit looking at him now because I'll remain distracted if I keep my eyes on him. as I was saying, just because someone else says that you are, you know, stupid, guilty, ugly, you know, unworthy, doesn't make it true. So this is what we looked at last week. We looked at this belief that someone else's judgment is proof of my own self-judgment. And we also looked at the fact that the only reason that we believe someone else's judgment is because we are making the same self-judgment. So, in fact, Francine's here. I used Francine as an example last week. I said, you know, Francine is a small, thin person. She's just, everything about her is tiny. And so if I was to tell Francine that she was a fat pig, she would laugh. She would laugh. She may believe other things that I could insult her with, but she would, there's no way she would believe that, and she would laugh. But if I said to many other people that I know, you're a fat pig, they would feel hurt. It's not my judgment that's causing the pain. It's their own self-judgment, the fact that they already perceive themselves as a, quote, fat pig, and then I say it, that's just proof to them that their judgment was right. But again, Francine's not hurt because she doesn't have that judgment about herself. So even though we say that it's an outside person's judgment that is proof of my guilt or proof of my unworthiness, the truth is it's our own self-judgment. Without the self-judgment, no outside person's words could ever hurt. Those outside words only hurt when we have an internal agreement. We also talked about the true interpretation of these words. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. Instead of this being a statement about someone outside of me, this is actually a statement about my own internal condition. If I choose to have a grievance against you, and I do not forgive it, I get to carry the burden of that grievance. You know, if someone else is saying, oh, so-and-so is so great, but I have this judgment against so-and-so in my mind, then when they begin to talk about how great so-and-so is, I get to feel that stab of pain. I get to carry the burden. If, however, I choose to see my judgment as meaningless, I realize I made up the meaning, and therefore I can let it go, and I genuinely let it go, then I have no burden within me. My inner state is perfect, right? So that's the true meaning of that. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven, meaning I will not carry an inner burden within me. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven, meaning I will carry the inner burden with me. And that's what we looked at last week. So what I am going to do now is play a song so that we can shift into a bit of silence, not real silence because we have music, but I go into inner silence and I'm listening to the song. So we can shift into a bit of silence, and then after the silence we will begin something new. So the song that's popping out at me is by a Christian group called Mercy Me, and the name of the song is Word of God Speak.
I'm finding myself at a loss for words. And the funny thing is, it's okay. The last thing I need is to be heard, but to hear what you would say. Word of God speak. Would you pour down like they, washing my eyes to see your majesty, to be still and know that you're in this place. Please let
Get to start looking at something new. So I'm looking in the Bible at John chapter 20, starting at verse 24. And this is a fairly famous story. Many of you, even if you don't know the Bible well, may know this story. This is called Jesus Appears to Thomas. And by the way, for those of you who aren't always joining us for the guiding light, we're near the end of the book of John, so the Jesus here is the resurrected Jesus. All right, here we go. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Well, many people have spiritual experiences. I'm sure you guys know this. Maybe some of you have had spiritual experiences. And by spiritual experiences right now, I mean mystical experiences. You know, like my experience of being an apple would be an example of a mystical experience. Joe Wolf's experience of expanding and becoming everything is in his cell and then continuing to expand and becoming everything outside his jail cell window, right? That is an example of a mystical experience. And many people have mystical experiences. And sometimes what happens when someone doesn't have a mystical experience is they crave it. They crave, I don't know what, that proof. Maybe in some cases they crave that proof. In other cases, it could just be that they perceive themselves to be unworthy, too unworthy for a mystical experience. And they crave the mystical experience because they think that will then make them worthy. Why mystical experiences come to some people and others, I cannot say. Nor will I attempt to guess, but I can assure you that it has absolutely nothing to do with your worthiness, or I'm just looking at words, trying to find the best words for what I want to say next. It has nothing to do with your worthiness or your, well, I guess I'll use these words. I have an idea, but it's funny because it's an idea that can't be expressed in words. So I'll just say it this way. Or your ability to awaken, but what's built into that word ability in this sentence is the fact that you are already are it. You already are the truth. So because you already are the truth, you have equal ability to awaken as anyone else. So if you have not had mystical experiences, it has nothing to do with your worth or lack of worth, right? That's just not a statement in that direction at all. And it has nothing to do with your inherent ability. That's a good way of saying it. Your inherent ability to awaken. And so what this story seems to be doing is Thomas, for whatever reason, is saying, unless I have the, I'm going to call it mystical experience myself, I won't believe it. And out of compassion, Jesus shows up, right? He shows up in the room even though the doors were locked. Resurrected Jesus. I mean, this would be a mystical experience. If resurrected Jesus showed up in your bedroom, you would perceive that as a mystical experience, right? So Jesus shows up and he gives Thomas the experience that Thomas is asking for, and Thomas immediately believes, and that's expressed by him saying, "My Lord and my God." But then Jesus says to him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Blessed are those who have not needed a mystical experience in order to trust the truth that they are. And I think that at least many people that I've spoken to, you know, obviously I haven't talked to everyone, so I don't know how each individual feels. But whenever anyone has spoken to me about the fact that they have not yet had mystical experiences, their attitude, I don't think, was ever, "Blessed am I have not had a mystical experience." Now, the interesting thing is, you know, you could say that I am someone who has had many, many mystical experiences, including hearing very clearly an inner voice and being able to scribe NTI and the teachings of Inner Ramana and several personal messages. And if you know my whole story, then you know that after the teachings of Inner Ramana, the inner voice went away. And when it went away, what it explained to me was that I could not fully realize my truth as long as I was still talking to an inner voice, as long as I was still playing the student who needed to learn from an inner voice, that even that little bit of duality would keep me from awakening. And so the voice needed to leave, needed to disappear, needed to stop, so that I could realize myself as truth. Maybe because of the way it was explained to me, I don't know, but I actually feel more blessed now in this current experience that I have, which does not involve visions, does not involve radical mystical experiences, and does not involve an inner voice. I feel more blessed now. I remember Ken Wapnick used to talk about Helen Schuckman's phase before she heard the voice, actually, but her phase of having all of these visions, like the famous vision of her in the cave where she finds the scroll. Remember that vision? And she's invited to unscroll it in one direction and she can see the past, or she can unscroll it in the other direction and she can see the future, or she could just leave it right where it is now in the middle where it says God is. And she chooses to stay right there, and she's told she made the right decision this time. Do you remember that vision? And there were a number of other visions as well. Ken Wapnick used to refer to that phase as her magical phase. Recently, I was talking to a dear friend that I have a deep, deep respect for, that I really do think has a very genuine awakening happening. And my dear friend, by the way, another friend that was with us had a mystical experience looking at the two of us together. And my dear friend wasn't surprised about the mystical experience, because my dear friend said that this wasn't, you know, that we had been together during the lifetime of Jesus, and that I would one day remember. And what I noticed in my mind for the next, I don't know, several hours, was what I'm going to call a temptation. A temptation to step away from focus on truth, which is formless and timeless, into the story of, oh, who do you think I was during the lifetime of Jesus? And who were you? And what do you remember? And all of that stuff. But what I felt even deeper than the temptation was the, I'm going to call it the purpose of just letting the temptation pass me by and not say a word, not ask a single question of this person who thinks they know who I was and who thinks that he has a distinct memory. Just don't go there. And I chose to follow that deeper guidance. And the reason for that is because ever since the voice went away, the inner voice went away with the teaching of the resistor, the doubter, and abiding, I have felt in a very strong way that all of that spiritual stuff, which for a time can be helpful. I mean, I think it was helpful for Thomas to see Jesus and to be able to put his finger in the holes, right? And I think it was helpful for me to hear the inner voice, and it was helpful for me to have the experience of being the apple, right? All of that was helpful. But there's just this knowing that we can get stuck there. There's a quote, I believe it's by the Yoga Vasistha, where it talks about how Vasistha came to see that he could travel the galaxies. And you know, there are people now who do this. I don't remember the exact word for them, but some of you may know, but they go into meditation, and then in meditation, they travel to other worlds. In fact, somebody called me up once and wanted to know if I could hook him up with somebody who could do this, you know, that he wanted to learn how to do this. And Vasistha said that he learned how to do this, and that he could travel the galaxies and all the different worlds and really, yeah, astral projection. That's it. Thank you. Astral projection. That's it. So that he could do this, and he traveled the galaxies and traveled to all of these different worlds until he came to realize he was just playing longer in the dream. One of the things that Ramana Maharshi teaches or taught as a man on earth, which that experience ended in 1950. So one of the things that Ramana Maharshi taught is that in meditation, you know, all kinds of things can happen in meditation. Different beings can come. You can see into the future. You know, you can probably do astral projection. And what Ramana Maharshi taught was, if any of this stuff begins to happen, the immature spiritual student will be excited by these things. The immature spiritual student will be all excited about these apparent special powers or mystical experiences. But the mature spiritual student will ask, who is the eye that sees this? The mature spiritual student will be focused on truth. By the way, Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Why would Jesus say that? Is it because their faith is better? I think that's maybe how Christians interpret it. But I do not think that's what it means. I think that Jesus, like Ramana Maharshi and like Michael Langford and like I'm sure so many others, I think Jesus knew that these mystical experiences can become another delay very quickly and very easily. You could say we become spiritual junkies, spiritual mystical experience junkies. We want to acquire the special powers. You know, we want to see into the truth. We want to remember our previous reincarnations. We want to talk about how I was one of the apostles or something like that. And it's all just another form of specialness. It's all just another form of delay. I mean, there are a couple of stories I can tell. I've probably told before, but I will tell them again. One story is actually called The Yogini, and it's the story, it's a story that Muji told, and let's see if Francine is still here. Yep, Francine, the picture hanging above Danielle's bed is the Yogini. So Muji tells a story about the Yogini. The yogini being a female yogi, and she was meditating, and in her meditation these beautiful, beautiful colors came, and in fact, you know, they were heavenly colors or something, because they were colors that you don't see in this world, and they were like living colors. They were just amazing. And so the yogini is in meditation and these colors come. And at first, you know, it just takes her breath away to see this. But then she remembers. And she asks, who is it that sees these colors? And she focuses her attention back on awareness. She continues to meditate. I don't know if it's for hours, days, weeks, months, years. But one day, while meditating, she hears sounds. Yeah, beautiful and melodious sounds that could be heard. So I'm telling the story a little wrong, and Larry's putting in probably Muji's words. There we go. Yeah, he's doing it better than me. That's perfect. Beautiful and melodious sounds could be heard, appearing as if from nowhere and everywhere simultaneously. And again, at first she was, you know, but then she remembered to ignore this by asking, who is it that sees this? And then, now I'm just going to read what Larry has in the room, because he's got the story right there. Shortly after this, there appeared several beings shaped as if from pure light, floating through space and smiling lovingly at her in a welcoming manner. She felt profoundly touched and filled with loving emotions, but inwardly she somehow kept her composure. How profound she felt. But this also cannot be what is the unchanging reality. For were I not here, who would see them? So again, the who am I? What am I? Who sees these beings? As soon as this third insight occurred, the figures vanished. Her mind entered her heart and could no more produce any effects. A deep silence prevailed as her mind merged inside her indivisible, unconquerable, and essential being, a state known to the yogis as awakening. Right? Awakening. She awakened. She became enlightened. Because she did not give in to the temptation of the exquisite colors like no color could paint or no flower could display. She did not give in to the color, to the sounds that were from beyond this world. She did not give in to the heavenly beings. She was the mature spiritual seeker. Jesus says, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Another story, and again, I won't tell it perfectly either, but if Larry quickly posts it, we'll see how good he is at finding things. I'll read it. The next story is the story of Ramana Maharshi and his attendant. There was a man, I don't remember his name, it started with a K. I'll just call him K. K was Ramana Maharshi's attendant for many, many, many years. And one day K said, I would like to leave now and go into the cave and practice self-inquiry full-time. And, of course, Ramana Maharshi granted him permission to do so. So he went up onto Arunachala, went into a cave, and began to meditate and practice self-inquiry. And, again, I don't know how long he was there. But one day he sees in his mind's eyes a temple that is some miles away, and the temple is on fire and it burns to the ground. Later in the day, some visitors come to the cave and tell him, this temple such and such caught on fire and burned to the ground. And he gets so excited. He gets excited because he saw this in his mind. You know, it's like that he has this power to be able to see it happening even though it was miles away. And so he feels like he's achieved something. And so he leaves the cave. And he runs back down the mountain back to where Ramana Maharshi is, and he tells Ramana Maharshi this story, and he's all excited about, you know, how much he has achieved in meditation. And Ramana Maharshi just asks, "Why did you leave the cave?" And in fact, Ramana Maharshi lets him know that he is not ready yet for self-inquiry and asks him to come back and be his attendant. He says it's better for him to stay near the enlightened one than to go and practice self-inquiry right now because he is not ready. He is not ripe. And Jesus says, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed, those who are not caught up by the mystical experiences, but like the yogini can focus on truth." One more story. Papaji. Some of you all know Papaji. Papaji, from the time he was a little bitty boy, had the appearance of Krishna. That would be like if you had the appearance of Jesus start coming to you from the time you were a little child. And no one else could see it, but you saw Jesus, you talked to Jesus, Jesus was your companion from the time you were a little child. Well, Papaji had the same experience with Krishna from the time he was a little child. He also went to see Ramana Maharshi. He was guided to Ramana Maharshi as his guru. I won't tell that story. It's a different story. But he starts telling Ramana Maharshi about how he walks around Arunachala with Krishna, talking to Krishna. And Ramana Maharshi says to him, "What good is a god that comes and goes? Seek that which does not come and go." And Jesus says, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." So it's interesting because even though, you know, to some people, you could say I've lost something. Like if somebody thinks that, I used to have these dreams that were highly mystical. and extremely revealing. I mean, if we were to get out my journal and just read my journal, I mean, the dreams I used to have, the visions I used to have, if we would go back and, you know, again, look at all the personal messages that came through the inner voice, all of NTI, all of inner Ramana, you know, some people would be like, wow, wow. And then, you know, how come you've lost it? Why have you lost it? How come these things don't happen to you anymore? I feel in my heart the answer is because now I'm only interested in truth. Those things were helpful for a time. They pointed me in the right direction. But when those experiences themselves, as inner Ramana told me, it's time for this to stop now, I let it go. I feel not having the experiences is a more mature state. Being interested only in the truth and not wanting to be distracted by anything that is not truth is a more mature state. I feel this is what Muji is teaching when he tells the story of the yogini. I feel this is what Ramana Maharshi was telling Papaji and his attendant. And I feel that's what Jesus is saying here. So, although out of some type of compassion, Jesus shows up and gives the mystical experience to Thomas, he also says, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. In other words, he is saying to Thomas, in a polite way, you have not yet matured. Blessed are those who have matured and are seeking only the truth, only the changeless truth, and not looking to the changing, the mystical experiences, for some proof of reality. So if you've never had a mystical experience, the truth is, you don't need one. You don't need one because the truth is as it is, and the truth is what you are right now. And all you need to do is learn to look towards it, have the desire to look towards it. And it is not a mystical experience. It is not something that comes and goes. It is not something that changes. Right? Mystical experiences come and go and change. The truth is not that. You do not need to have the phase of mystical experiences in order to realize truth, because the truth is already present as you now. Blessed are those who have not needed mystical experiences and yet have believed and therefore have sought after the changeless truth. I'll call that awareness, watching awareness for now. So that is the end of John chapter 20. And we still have more time, which means we're going to begin John chapter 21. And it's kind of fun for me reading John chapter 21 because I've been to Israel a few times. And I have been to a place where tradition says chapter 21 occurred. And in fact, I have a rock here. It's like a volcanic rock. But I waded out into the Sea of Galilee at the place where it said chapter 21 occurred. And I just reached down to the bottom of the sea. You know, I was only standing in like knee-deep water. Reached down to the bottom of the sea and picked up this rock. And I kept it. So I have this rock right here in my office. And it's one of the things that I sometimes hold while meditating. I love to hold things while I meditate. So sometimes I grab that rock. So it's kind of fun reading chapter 21 because I can kind of envision a place where they say it happens. Now, I don't know how anyone would know that chapter 21 happened there, but But, you know, it certainly was near there, even if it wasn't that exact spot, right? It certainly was near there. So here we go. This is chapter 21. I'm going to read Jesus and the Miraculous Catch of Fish. By the way, before I read Jesus and the Miraculous Catch of Fish, I just want to say again, because I say this a lot, these stories are stories. And we don't know the truth of what happened in the dream. And one way we know it is the stories are told differently. So here in the book of John, this story of the miraculous catch of fish happens after Jesus' resurrection. In another book, I don't remember which one off the top of my head, but in another book in the New Testament, this story is how Jesus meets Peter. Right? Peter comes in. He's a fisherman. He comes in after a day of fishing in the Sea of Galilee, and he caught nothing. And Jesus, who he has never met, walks up to him and, you know, asks him what's up. And Peter explains he caught no fish. And Jesus tells him to get back in the boat. Jesus gets in the boat with him and a couple others. They go out to sea. Jesus says, cast your net here. He casts his net, pulls in this big catch, and that's what leads Peter to have faith in Jesus, and that's the beginning of his following. So he needed a mystical experience to get started too. Here in the book of John, that story happens after the resurrection. So again, we don't want to be too attached to the stories as truth, because we don't know what truth there is to these stories. But as we read these stories, we can let the right mind interpret them for us, just as it just now interpreted the story about Thomas needing to see the holes in Jesus' hands, right? And that was a very helpful right-minded interpretation. It helps us to not be attached to mystical experiences and instead to go for the truth, right? So let's see what happens as we read this story about Jesus and the miraculous catch of fish. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. By the way, that's what they used to... Oh, where'd you go? Can you guys still hear me? I just looked and you're gone. Oh, wait, you're back. I don't know where you went. Could you hear me the whole time? I looked up from the Bible and looked at the screen, and all I saw was my desktop. Pal Talk had disappeared, but then it came back. So good. All right. We just had a mystical experience. You guys disappeared. All right. Okay, John chapter 21. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. That is what they used to call the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them, and they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have caught. Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So one thing that's interesting about this particular story is it's the same, it's similar anyway, to the story of Mary Magdalene seeing Jesus right after he was resurrected. Remember when we read that story, it says that at first she did not recognize him. And the same thing is happening here. They do not recognize him. Now, when I read the story of Mary not recognizing him, the interpretation that I got at that time was that was the spiritual intuition, that we always have the spiritual intuition. And in fact, I told a story about a friend of mine who was feeling to do something kind of delinquent as a 10-year-old. And he very clearly felt that inner intuition that said, you know, don't do this. And he repressed that and did it anyway. And that led to like about 30 years of delinquency from him. And as he came out of his 30 years of delinquency and drugs and everything else, he says he remembers that day when that intuition that knew what was best for him was guiding him not to take that first step. And he did take that first step and went down this long 30-year path that maybe he didn't need to walk down if he had listened, right? So we all have this spiritual intuition, but we don't always recognize it as that. And then at some point, you know, especially if we awaken to our spiritual calling, at some point maybe we do begin to recognize it as that. And that was the interpretation that came when I read the story of Mary not at first recognizing Jesus. But this time, I am getting a different interpretation. I'm going to call it a deeper interpretation. The interpretation that is coming this time isn't about the inner wisdom. It's about the truth itself. Many of us think that we have not yet experienced the truth. You know, we think we are still seeking truth. But that is not true. Every single person has had direct experiences of truth and simply doesn't recognize it as the truth. And therefore, the experiences are ignored. When Ellie Ruzdar was here with us in April, she talked about that. This was her definition of a mature and an immature seeker. In fact, remember this story that Ellie told us. She talked about how if you have a 3-year-old boy and a 40-year-old man, and the 3-year-old boy, of course, represents the immature spiritual seeker, and the 40-year-old man represents the mature spiritual seeker. And she says if you offer the 3-year-old boy a diamond, a big diamond, you know, it's worth maybe $10 million, right? You offer him a diamond or an ice cream cone, the 3-year-old boy is more likely to take the ice cream cone. But if you offer the 40-year-old man the diamond worth $10 million and the ice cream cone, he's much more likely to take the diamond because he recognizes the value of the diamond. The 3-year-old boy did not recognize the value of the diamond. And what she said is when we are not yet mature spiritual seekers, she can still point out the truth to us. She did not say that we would be blocked from realizing the truth. If we, you know, went to her and let her do whatever it is that she does as a guru that points the truth out to people, she says she could point the truth out to us. It's just if we are not ready for it, our mind will bounce right back and we will not accept it. We will not recognize it as the truth. And that's the interpretation that's coming this time. The interpretation is that we can experience truth directly without recognizing it as truth because our imagination still wants truth to be something else. And you know, that's kind of interesting. If you look at NTI Romans chapter 2 tells a story about how, of course, all there was truth. And then this question came into the mind, what would it be like if it was something different than it is? And that our curiosity went into that direction and we became so engrossed in the idea of something different that we lost awareness of truth. And in NTI Revelation, near the end of NTI Revelation, when it's really talking about the awakening to truth again, what NTI Revelation says is that we now accept it, the truth, exactly as it is, and we no longer want it to be something different. And that's what leads us to awakening, is that willingness to let the truth be just what it is. And so what's happening here in this particular story is at first the disciples are not recognizing Jesus, which is the representative of truth, because they still want truth to be something, pardon the expression, but they still want truth to be something more exciting. How many teachers have said it's ordinary? It's blissful. It's absolute joy. It's complete love, but absolutely ordinary. And again, Jesus is standing there, you know, and they don't recognize Jesus. They don't recognize the truth, but they get all excited about the mystical experience. So this is the second story we have in a row where the mystical experience is more interesting than the truth. And we can go back to the previous story where Jesus says, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And the disciples, as far as this story is going in the Bible, they have not yet matured to the point where they're ready for the truth as it is. The only reason that they recognize that truth must be present is because of the mystical experience. It says here, none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord, but the reason they knew it was the Lord was because of the mystical experience. They did not dare to ask, "Who are you?" That represents there was still some fear in their mind. So mystical experiences can point to truth, but mystical experiences are not the truth itself. And the truth itself, to the mind, does not have the pizzazz that the mystical experience does. So a part of what we can start asking ourselves if we want to is, what do I want? Do I want a really exciting spiritual path where I can tell people all about my visions and the miracles? I used to love to tell my miracle stories. I did. I had miracle stories, and I loved to tell them. And I still tell them sometimes as what I would call parables, to show that you can trust, you don't need to fear. But there was a specialness in telling them once upon a time that I no longer have. You know, like, not like I was special, but like the miracle was special. Right? This is special. You know, that's that wanting the changing mystical spiritual path, the allure of its excitement more than the truth itself. And therefore, not being ready to recognize the truth even when it's in my direct experience. Having my mind, as Ellie would say, bounce right back from it. And that's really what I get out of this story. You know, and at the end it says, this was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. And there's something in the way that sentence is stated where it's, and they still weren't ready for the truth. And I notice we only have 4 minutes left, so I will save Jesus reinstates Peter, which is the next and last story, for the next time I'm with you. Now, I will not be here next week because next week I'm going to be in Costa Rica. So 2 weeks from now, which is actually the day before Thanksgiving. So if you come here and be with me the day before Thanksgiving, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I think we'll finish the book of John that day. That will be the end of this edition of The Guiding Light. As far as I know, The Guiding Light will continue, but we won't be reading from John anymore. I also just want to tell you that Awakening Together has decided to close right after my teaching on the day before Thanksgiving. Because, you know, many people go and they start cooking their pies or they have to travel to somebody's house or something like that. So the day before Thanksgiving, right after my teaching, Awakening Together will close and will stay closed the rest of that Wednesday. And we will also be closed on Thursday Thanksgiving so that people can be with their families. So we'll open up again the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So just to let you know in advance, and you'll hear more about that announcement, and you'll also see a posting on the daily updates. So I guess that's all that I have, and there's only a couple minutes left. I'm going to play a little bitty song here. The name of the song is Ought to Be.
I love you more than a slow falling summer rain, more than a silence that only the snow leaves behind. I love you more, and I love you better than the gray of the autumn air, better than spring in its blooming against the sky. I love
being willing to accept the truth as it is, even if it's not fireworks and other beings and other worlds and visions of the future and special powers and raising the dead, if it's just something very, very ordinary, but it's the truth. Think about that. Amen, and have a good day. Bye.